Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. Go follow me on the socials at Kojak Podcast. You want to support the show, Patreon, Venmo, you know where to find me and all those things. So today we have a doubleheader. I'm releasing this one first, and then I'll release the other one tomorrow, but they're both on YouTube. We had a monarchist, and on this show, we had a Hoppian, Jared, at End Democracy. He has a website, and all the stuff's on his Twitter, and I've been on his website. Jared, he's writing a book. He's such a knowledgeable guy. He was really helpful in helping explaining Hoppian and libertarianism and all this stuff like that. And yeah, it was just a great show. So go follow him. He's like an OG in the liberty movement. And so definitely check him out. Go support his work and get the Hoppian Bible. I think Democracy is a False God by Hans Hermann Hoppe. And that's it. So I'm Jack Allen, Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I will see you guys soon. Take care. Much love. God bless. And I'll talk to you soon, peeps. Peace. All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to second episode of the day of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. We're on a libertarian style flavor today. Oh, I'm Jack Allen. You know where I'll find me. But today I'm super excited. I got an awesome guest, and off anytime anyone's writing a book or is, I have like the utmost respect and just admiration for so Jared from At End Democracy. Welcome. Thanks for being on the show. How are you doing today, dude?
No problem. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Jack.
Awesome. So I've followed you for a while. So can you just like, I guess, tell everybody a little about yourself or where you fall politically and all those good things?
So, sure. Me and my team started a website in 2020, about 2 years ago. It had been probably 2 years before that in the making. It just never came to fruition, but, 2 years ago, we did start the site. It's Hoppian.org, dedicated to the ideas of Hans Hermann Hoppe and basically all things right wing. I consider myself extremely right wing, probably the purest form of right wing. A lot of people get what is right and left very, very wrong. A lot of times you see people concoct some kind of vision of what it means to be right wing or left wing. And it's usually 9 times out of 10, some amorphous set of political positions or something, you know, like a political party or something like that. This political party is more right wing than the other one. But 9 times out of 10, people don't understand why, or they may not even be correct in their assumptions. So that's one of the things that I really harp on quite a bit, and is actually the subject of the first chapter of my book that I'm writing.
Oh, really? That's the first chapter of your book?
Yep.
That is so. Are you still working on it, or did you publish your book
no.
yet?
So I'm the only way that I'm ever going to get it done, because I keep threatening people. I'm like, I'm going to release this book. I'm going to do it. But the only way I'm really going to get it done is if I force myself to publish the chapters online on some kind of schedule.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, like maybe every couple of months I'll publish a chapter or something like that. That way I can force myself to get it out, because I'm a little schizophrenic in that I'll sit down and I'll write quite a bit on things, and then I'll put it away and I won't look at it again for a while. And I've probably got several Word documents filled. I've probably got a book there. I could just go through and pull everything out. But it's a little bit of, some of it's old, some of it's not old, some of it's not relevant. So some of the time that I'm spending on the book is just going through my old writings, cleaning mm-hmm. that stuff up, and then also trying to form it into coherency, because some of it is, I guess my muse is rage. So I'm kind of a rage writer. So like when I get angry about something, I feel passionate about it. So I'll sit down and I'll just write pages of stuff, just like, you know, like if I see it. I mean, this may seem a little petty, but I may see something really stupid on Twitter or yeah. online, or when someone speaks to me in person, and I'm like, this is so wrong that I can't help, like, you know, like it's that meme, you know, hold on, honey, I can't come to bed. Someone's wrong on the internet.
Yes.
That's basically how I write, because I find more often than not, if you're not passionate about something, that there's no flavor to it, you know, there's no spice to what you're doing. And I really look to that. And that's another topic that I talk on quite a bit, is how much I appreciate hate. and not like violent hate or anything like that, but just the emotion. Right. I think it's a good emotion. I kind of don't think emotions are good or bad. It's kind of what you do with them, you know? And I think hate is often, at least today, is very overlooked, and it's very much titled the bad emotion, right? But I don't look at it like that. I think it's a great emotion. I think it's probably one emotion that today we overlook and put down the most, and Ooh. We see a lot of society ills because of it.
Ooh, I like that, dude.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there. I mean, like the first thing that always comes to mind when I think of a leftist is that they hate, right?
Yeah,
and it's like, okay, well, if you hate, then what are you saying? You know, like that's kind of an idiotic notion, right? That you hate. And it's not that you hate. You hate what people do with that hate. You hate what they turn it into. You hate what they use it for. And I want to use it for positive things. I think using hate is probably one of humanity's greatest tools. A lot of things in human history have been brought about through hate, whether it be some form of conquest that was that, you know, if you're a militarist or someone like that that enjoys that kind of thing. Or great battles or great wars, a lot of that was fueled by hate. But there's also great things that have been fueled by hate too. There are a lot of artists, there's a lot of beautiful composers who looked inside themselves and saw something out there that they really despised, and that's what they used to channel that into something good, something productive, something great. And I also think, and I'm going on here quite a bit, so forgive me.
No, but, dude. Keep going, dude. You're articulate, eloquent. I love it.
But I think a lot of times, you know, there are a lot of people that they just dismiss this emotion outright. And it's something that I think that can be utilized for a lot of good. And especially one thing I think that is underutilized in our society is discrimination. I think that, you know, as kind of from my libertarian kind of roots there, discrimination is a great thing. You discriminate every day, regardless of whether you know it or not. And it may not be based on race or religion or something like that. It may just be based on, I don't like the way that person's hair is cut. Or, I don't like that guy's mustache. Looks right. A little Hitler-y to me, you know, something like that, you know. And it's like, that's fine. That's good. These are fine things to do. And it's okay for us to separate and say, hey, I don't like you because you're fat, you're thin, you're black, you're white, you're gay, you're straight, whatever. That's right. A good thing. You know, what drives people to violence more often than not is them being forced together. Like I cannot tell you how many times that you look on the news and there are people that hate each other, like really, really hate each other. And that's fine. They can hate each other, but it comes to violence because they can't get away from one another. They are stuck with their neighbors that they hate, or they're stuck with their significant other that they hate, their wife, their husband, their their children. Not that I think you should abandon your children. I think that's a totally other topic. Definitely not. I'm very pro family, but you know, it's just one of these things that, we're often more peaceful as people when we can leave a situation. And today, to me, the state has made that totally impossible. You can't leave. Where are you going to go?
Yeah, I think I was in John Taylor Gatto's book, and one of the ones he wrote, but he brought that what you're just saying, like in Massachusetts pre-revolution or around revolution, you know, the one Protestant sect hated they wouldn't let them in. They wanted to, you know, they hated each other so much, and eventually though, after like 50 years, they connected and started working together, because one was like a more socialistic society. One was because they were Irish. I can't remember the details, but that was the point he brought up. Within 50 years, there was no, they became, you know, they got along, and Massachusetts became the liberal shithole it is. But compare that to a Civil Rights Act or whatever, forcing people together, you're going to create resentment. And now
it's going to last forever. Right. That's what it will do. Is the race relations in the United States have only gotten worse. I don't care what anybody says. It has only gotten worse. That's one thing I will agree with the civil rights people with, is race relations have not gotten better. And I don't think that they will get better. And I think a lot of that stems from the fact that we are far too integrated. You can't have black enclaves. You can't have white enclaves. Because the moment that you do that, you're restricting interstate commerce or something like that, or you're not allowing this Lowbert notion of freedom of movement or something. I don't believe in any of that. I think very much so that what Hans Hermann Hoppe says is that I believe very much in free trade and restricted immigration. And that's not just interstate immigration. I'm talking about inside of the country. I don't think people should be able to move wherever they want. I think, you know, a lot of times libertarians get a lot of shit for saying, oh, he's afraid of roads or he hates roads. You're fucking right. I hate roads. You know what roads did? Roads made the United States more integrated than it has ever been. It made it possible for all these people from all these disparate walks of life to come and be forced together. This is why I hate public transit. I hate it for the same reason. I hate it too. I think more often than not, you see, and I've seen this, you see a lot of people from, I guess you would say, more violent areas coming to more peaceful areas, either A, looking for work, or B, looking to cause trouble. 9 times out of 10, they won't spend their own money to get there. They're riding on subsidized transit to get there. Right. And the reason that they do that is because they can.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And people will. People are violent, and that's normal. Human beings, and God love them. I love myself. I love human beings. But we're a violent species, and that's perfectly normal that we're violent. However, we can reduce that violence by reducing the amount of integration that we have. I truly believe that.
Well, someone would say to you, well, that's, you're now limiting people to prosper. What would you say? I don't, you know, just being like devil's advocate.
No. Yeah, no, that's a very common thing, is that People think, especially libertarians or what I would call a Lulbert, thinks that we're only tied together through economics, and we are not only tied together through economics. I'm more than an economic unit. I do not believe in this atomization that a lot of so-called libertarians believe in. Murray Rothbard sure as hell didn't believe in that. He thought that was an abomination. It was the road toward egalitarianism. And I'm not an egalitarian, I'll tell you that much. And I don't think you can be a right winger and an egalitarian at all. And I talk about that in the chapter a little bit, but there is a distinct characteristic of someone who understands maybe this Cato kind of line of thinking that everything is tied together with economics. And to a certain extent, they're right. However, that is not all there is to the human experience. I'm born into my family. I'm born into a region, a culture, a language, a dialect, a history. Those things aren't bad. Where did we go wrong? And I don't think any legitimate libertarian ever did go wrong, but I think the libertarian, whole really went wrong with this kind of left-wing notion of destroying hierarchies that came, from the association with classical anarchism. And, Murray Rothbard thought it was hilarious to steal the term anarchism from the left. But I think that he actually made a mistake when he did that because it brought in a lot of problems. And mostly it's this destruction of hierarchy. And you see that with a lot of so-called libertarian ideologies, is they want to get rid of hierarchy. And I'm going to reference the chapter a lot, but in the chapter, I talk about this as well, because in the chapter, you learn what the right is, why the classic four quadrant political spectrum is wrong. There's another political spectrum going around, which is the triangle. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but that's really popular now. But really, I literally list out the graphs and I'll say, okay, well, here's the four quadrant political spectrum. And once you understand that the left, there is no natural egalitarianism, then it collapses into a triangle. People are starting to wake up to this, that there is no natural egalitarianism. We're born unequal. It's normal to be unequal. This inequity is what we are. And it's totally normal. The right embraces diversity. It's not the left. The right embraces diversity. We want difference. We want inequality. We want this inequity because it's what makes us unique. It's what makes us human, right? What did the Soviets try to do in the beginning? They tried to create the new Soviet man. They tried to destroy what made us unique and what made us unequal, because communism wants to make this kind of leveled equality of people. And the only way that you can do that or attempt to do it is to destroy what makes human beings great, our differences, right? Poetic. Yeah. I think more often and this is what it is. And this kind of artificial destruction of that hierarchy and this artificial power structure that's created creates this artificial egalitarianism, and that one side of that four quadrant political spectrum collapses. But what's coming next, and I'm hoping that people wake up to this, I'm hoping my book will help people down that path, is that once that side collapses, you begin to understand that the other side collapses too. And the other side collapses because there is no artificial hierarchy. Any artificial hierarchy, the state, for instance, is a false hierarchy. It creates egalitarianism by its nature. If we create, say, a company, right, and you and me are working at this company, we hire a bunch of employees. And then on day three, the guy we hired is a janitor. And we say, oh, the poor janitor isn't making enough money. Let's make him the CFO. What do you think is going to happen? The company is going to collapse. And as a result, we've raised someone up that didn't need to be there. We've created this artificial hierarchy because he didn't earn this. We put him in that position because we felt bad for him. And now everybody's lost, right? This is what happens when you create artificial hierarchies, is that eventually, A, they collapse, or B, they become so corrupt in order to maintain their power, they have to steal. And this is what the state is. This is what the state does. It found out that if I can't do this the good way or the right way through natural means, because I can't, because it's an artificial hierarchy, then right. We're going to steal to keep it up. We're going to steal to keep it upright. And this is what happens everywhere. Look at Enron. Enron was the same thing. Enron couldn't stay solvent. So what did they do? The first thing that they did all this crap with the bad business deals and stuff like that in order to inflate their stock price to keep them afloat. It right. happens in everything. There's nothing that this doesn't affect. It is universal. It is human.
I know a little bit about, so where would you classify yourself as a Hoppian? Is that correct? Or?
Yeah. There's a lot of, it's hard. One of the guys that has worked with me on the site for a very long time, his name is Taylor Shiring. He's our business development guy. He's a very, very good guy, very smart guy. He still uses the term libertarian. I don't fault him for that. It's a word that has meant a lot to a lot of people for a very long time. And I understand that hurts. But I kind of look at it like this. I don't call myself a liberal. I don't call myself a anti-federalist, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't consider these terms, as useful as they once were. Because today, if you call yourself a libertarian to someone, all that it does is immediately conjure up ideas of kookery insaneness or libertinism or something like this. That's really, really unfortunate. Because of all of the leftist problems that we've had in libertarianism, that was the genesis of the site, was to say, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of seeing this. It's pervaded everything. We're going to provide at least a platform for people that still believe in what this is, which is, to me, a fundamentally right-wing philosophy and a brilliant legal theory that explains so many things and very clearly, and we're going to give people a place to express that. And the best thing that I could come up with was one of the people that was A, still alive, and was B, still completely brilliant and consistent in that vein, and someone who the left absolutely despises. I thought that was perfect. I couldn't think of a better human being to model the site after than Hans Hermann Hoppe.
Can you explain? I know there's some, like, so my immediate my understanding of Hoppe, and I'm sure a lot of my listeners, there were more conspiracy as opposed to liberty movement.
Sure.
But my view is he's kind of like a monarchist almost. Is that correct?
So a lot of people think that, but really, so here's, let me kind of give you the 5-minute elevator speech about history. So democracy is the most degenerated form of government, right? It's right before total chaos, right? Mm. And then all the way on the other end, we have natural order, right? So how do we get from one end all the way to the other? There's a spectrum here, right? There's a gradient. And what is the next step back from democracy is a republic. And then the next step back from that would be, or maybe probably on par, would be kind of like a constitutional monarchy. And then before that is an absolute monarchy. And before that is a kind of a feudal monarchy. And before that is pure feudalism. And before that is the natural order, right? So we want to be moving in that direction. Now, what Hoppe shows is that actually throughout time, egalitarians have caused this degeneration. They've caused this degeneration from the natural order all the way to democracy. And that degeneration is caused through egalitarianism. Hoppe goes into way better detail than I'm going to be able to hear.
I'm sure.
But one of the easiest things to point to is the collapse from an absolute monarchy to a constitutional monarchy. And the collapse from the absolute monarchy to the constitutional monarchy is divesting the importance of what that land or that property or that land area means to that person. So if you're a monarch, right? And you say, okay, this is my land, this is my kingdom, this is my fiefdom, what have you, this is mine, right? If it's mine, I care about it. It's the same thing as a Tragedy of the Commons, right?
Right.
So for people that don't know, Tragedy of the Commons is very easily an example is a public park versus a private park. If it's a public park, people aren't going to give a shit about it. They're going to litter it up and trash it, cause all sorts of hell in it.
Yeah,
happens all the time. The only way to keep that up is through a state, and the state uses state agents to come in and use police officers and pay with your stolen money to keep it up and things like that. Whereas a private park basically charges you amount of money to come into the park, and they use those funds to keep the park up. And that park is probably owned by an individual or a set of individuals, and they care about their property. It's the same thing as your house versus your friend's house. If you break a couch in your friend's house, you might feel bad, but it's not the same as if you broke your own couch, right? If you break your own couch, then you're really fucking pissed, right? Like this is kind of the way things work. Is if it's yours, it's more personal to you. You care more about it. This is a human thing. It's just a very human thing, right? So the same thing happens with governments. So you go from an absolute monarchy where a king cares about his landed property, cares about even his people. He cares about the buildings and the animals and things like this. He's going to do everything he can to make sure that he can keep that kingdom running. Why? Because he knows that it's going to go to his children.
Right.
So he cares much about it because that's where it's going to go. Whereas in a constitutional monarchy, the ownership or the care is now divested to the people. And they're not going to care as much about it. You still have the monarch that is kind of pushed back and going to make sure that, they don't go too far or what have you. Depends on the monarch, obviously. But in general, as a general rule, we can say that this is the case. Well, now if we slide down, we're just going to skip Republic for a second because it's not as dramatic as a contrast. But we're going to shift on down to kind of maybe American democracy. I don't think we're a republic anymore. I think we've slipped headlong into democracy. Sorry for any of the conservatives out there.
it is Constitution. It is. It's so great.
I used to be that guy. That always said, hey, we're not a democracy. We're a republic. And it's a beautiful thought. It's a beautiful thought because it's closer to the natural order. Right. But get real, guys. I mean, it's gone. We lost it. It is what it is. It's time to come to grips with reality. So anyway,
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
In comparison, when you have a democracy, maybe say with a president, right? So you have a democracy with the Congress and you do have a president. That president is only there for what, maximum 8 years? Why does he give a shit if the place goes to hell? He doesn't. And now you have a guy that not only doesn't care and can't push back, but you also have this divestment to the people. So you can only ever see this collapse more and more and more into nothingness. And that's what eventually is going to happen in the United States. And I say that with a heavy heart because I love this country. I really do. Especially the South. That's where, I was born and raised. I love the South. If the South would have won, we might have had it made. So,
I agree. Well, hopefully it rises again, Jared.
Yeah.
I hope it rises again.
So that's kind of the premise, right? Is that The further we get away from the natural order, the less people care about it, and the more trashy it's going to get. It's the public park. The United States is currently the public park of the world. And
I love that. Oh my God.
That's what it is. Awesome. Yeah. And that's where we're going to stay. And it's only going to get worse until, you know, some crackheads move in and eventually it burns down. That's where we are. If we can figure out even how to move back the other direction, this is why people think that Hoppe's a monarchist, because he does praise monarchy for its ability to push back against this tendency, right?
Right.
So it's not that he's a monarchist. Monarchy has the same problems, right? It's just it has less problems than a democracy does. It's not that it doesn't have any problems. It still has plenty of problems. Mm-hmm. But this is where people don't take the ideas all the way to where they need to go, right? They take the first step, and then it doesn't go much beyond that.
I love, dude, that was, was this the America is the public park of the world? Was that
yeah,
a quote?
Yeah.
I freaking love that, dude. That's exactly what it is.
It is. It 100% is.
Well, so where did we go? Like, so real quick backstory. So I read this one book, and I'm sure I have a lot of views of Hoppe's, like, based off my short, like, three chapters I read, but I read this one book, Freemasons and Bankers Behind the Revolutions. And I've read that like a year ago. And that was the first book that I don't know. I'll send you the link. I can't say the full title because it's not a socially acceptable,
but
yeah exactly. So but that was, and it talked about how the Masons and the bankers have been behind all these systematic revolutions of Europe to overthrow monarchies. And that was, and I in the conspiracy world especially, we always say, oh, the monarchs, these bad bloodlines, blah blah blah. But after reading that, I said, holy crap, like, what if the monarchy, they took these down because that would gave the people the most protection, was
that's
this
right.
And so what's your take on that? And are you like a Christian, or does morality come into play?
I view very much Christianity the same way that Rothbard and Hoppe do, is that that Christianity has played a very key and intrinsic role to the development of civilization. I very much think that without it, we would probably fall prey to our animalistic tendencies than we have. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of value there for sure. I've already lost my train of thought. What was the question?
Again? Oh, I was asking, morality come into play.
And the bankers and all of this.
Yeah.
So what I would say is I have my own kind of conspiracy theory. It's kind of a proven historical conspiracy, but it's very much the egalitarians that have caused this degeneration throughout the world. Whether or not they were bankers or financiers or what have you, mm-hmm. They were egalitarians. I mean, at their core, that's really what they were. And there obviously was a lot of money moving back and forth between people during that time. And what I really like to point to, though, is Trotsky. I think Trotsky was probably the most evil human being that ever lived. I think he was absolutely brilliant, though. He knew how to exploit the ideas of egalitarianism more than maybe anybody else. And his strategies are still used today. They're still used today by the left. He was very much behind the French Revolution. He had deep ties with a lot of those parties. Trotsky's French turn made that made the French Revolution possible. Right. He made the Soviet Union possible. He made this leftward turn in America possible. I mean, he was friends with the United States president who gave him an American visa.
Mr. Wilson, he's a kind man. Watch what you say about Woodrow Wilson.
But yeah, I mean, he was good buddies with him. He gave him an American passport so he could travel around.
Right.
And Wilson was very much an egalitarian himself. This is where all of this really comes from, is this push. I think egalitarianism is the key thread throughout history. I think everything else comes back to that, is that if you believe in egality, if you believe in equality, if you believe that men should be equal in any way, that is where humanity goes wrong. And I think very much so that it has caused the death of millions of people.
Have you ever read, do you know who Anthony Sutton is?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So he wrote these three books. Have you read How Wall Street Funded
Bolshevik? Wall Street funded the Bolshevik Revolution. Yeah.
Right. But that was his, you know, he did a big thing on Trotsky and how he got 10,000 from Rockefeller for, and all this, you know, just,
that's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
And so so what is your take on, like, what's the point of pushing? Because clearly it's a concerted effort to push this. And I like this egalitarian theory. I've never heard anyone say that before. So was that your idea? That's really good.
Yeah. The evil of egalitarianism very much was awoken in me by Rothbard and Hoppe, but I've taken it to that extreme to where I think that that's where all the negative, maybe not all the negative, but 99% or the majority of the negative, terrible things in human history have come from that.
Well, and it's such an easy call. You can rally, you know, uneducated or just people lost under that, that theory easily. But so what's the point of pushing this egalitarian system? Is it to, have us all at this low level so they can just do whatever they want to us, or what's the benefit for the bankers and for these corrupt people to push this?
So I think it's a kind of a double-edged sword. On one hand, you have a lot of people who truly are just deluded into this fantasy that they can create the perfect world and the perfect human being. On the other side, you have people that see that they can exploit that behavior to their own personal gain. The people, the latter half of those people, the people who want to be the exploiters, that they don't understand that they're really signing their own death warrant.
Yes.
What was the first, you know, the thing that they did to the financiers in the Soviet Union? They killed them all. It's not, you are not going to create your perfect world. Your perfect world is going to eat you alive. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there are a good bunch of people who are just absolutely deluded into this fantasy. Yeah. That it is a fantasy and that's all it will ever be, that they think, and this is not to grant some reprieve on these people at all. And I don't think that it's naive to believe this. I think that very much so these people do believe this. They are true believers in egalitarianism and equality. And the perspective that we need to have is not that these people are misguided or what have you. It's that they believe this, they believe it truly, and we should hate them for it. And it's fine to hate them for it. The one of the things that really, really bothers me a lot is that people try and think that they can save these people. Why? Why are you trying to save them from their own stupidity? No, what we need to do is get the hell away from them. Get away from them as far as we can get away from them. Let them kill themselves, because that's what will eventually happen. And the natural order will spring back up from it. I look at the natural order very much like I look at nature. If you've got an abandoned road, you can pave a road, right? You can try and conquer nature. Human beings think they can conquer nature. You can't even conquer the nature in yourself. You know, you can't get over your drug addict or your you can't get over your alcoholism or something like that. You can't conquer yourself. You think you're going to conquer the whole world. You're not. Right. You're not going to conquer human nature. And if you look at nature itself, like I'm talking about, like, birds, bees, and plants, right? What's the first thing that happens when civilization leaves an area? The plants and the animals take it back. They bust the road up. It brings down the building. Plants consume things. This is what happens. And this is fine. This is great. This is what the natural order is. And very much so, when we separate and get rid of this egalitarianism, we don't have to worry. Once it's gone, right? It has to be gone. If once it's gone, we don't have to force this in any way. It will happen naturally. It is what we are naturally inclined to do, and it's a great thing. The problem becomes, is on the right, is that they think that they can use egalitarian power structures and for promoting anti-egalitarian means. And you can't do that. The only thing you're doing is creating an artificial hierarchy that will eventually collapse. This is the problem that people don't understand, is that, especially on the right, is that they think that they can conquer nature, that they can conquer this problem of egalitarianism and exploit egalitarian systems for their own good. And what you'll find more often than not is that the people who recognize maybe innately that they can't do this end up gaining more power more easily, because they'll work, they may work within the system. Say I'm a politician, right? And I'm working mm-hmm. within the system. I don't have to use the Department of Homeland Security to crush the left. I can get rid of the Department of Homeland Security and everybody will crush the left on their own. This is the way things work, right? The natural order springs forth from these types of things. Yeah. So what the right really has to understand is that we can push back. We can use whatever means we want to push back against the left. I am not one of those guys that says don't vote. Hell, if someone's throwing a vote at me, I look at that like someone's shooting at me, and I'm going to shoot back. I'm not a pacifist, right? If someone says, hey, we're going to impose CRT in schools, okay, well, guess what? Now you're going to read the Bible in schools. I don't care. Like, I don't care about that. I'm fighting back, right?
Yeah.
That's fine. But when you achieve a level of power, what you have to understand is that you cannot then utilize that power to do what you think is right, because at that point you are utilizing egalitarian means, and eventually you're going to expand that power out for your own purposes. It will get used against you. It gets used against you every single time. And now what the right will say is, okay, well, you're going to get, it's great to say that, but you're going to get shot in the back of the head because you're not willing to fight back. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you can fight back. I want you to fight back. I want you to fight back as much as you possibly can. But when you get it, dismantle it.
Yeah. It's so hard to, because that's the big issue. Who's going to get power just to give it up?
Right. And that this is the problem, right? This is the classic problem of, okay, well now, well, what do we do once we gain it? Do we have philosopher kings and all this kind of stuff, right? No, we don't. Let's throw that away for a second. Let's just talk about realism.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're realistic. We're right here in the here and now. Crush the left as much as you possibly can. Because as soon as you crush them, they're either going to go away, they're going to flee, they're going to do something. But at that moment that you crush them, start to dismantle their weapons, because those are their weapons, right? They're going to know how to use them better than you ever will. Fair. Then they will use them better than you ever will, because you're a moral person, right?
Right.
I don't find the left to be moral. They're vastly immoral. I think egalitarianism is immoral, right? The right does not have the stomach for this in the long term.
I've heard, I don't know who I was listening to, but that was like, I think it was Tim Pool, which is embarrassing to say, but I ran out of podcasts, but they brought up this point of the left will find you, hunt you down on social media, sedition hunters.
Yep.
They will take everything from you to prove a point. The right doesn't use these same tactics, and I'm not saying they should, but
I am. Hell, I don't care. I don't. I mean, we're in a battle, right?
Yes,
we are. Who judges the fucking warrior on the battlefield for striking down his enemies? I'm not going to blame a warrior for that. No. What I will blame a warrior for is starting another war for no reason, right? Once that war is done, right? We have to win the war. I'm not saying we can't win the war. But once we win the war, do not allow them to either retake those institutions or have those institutions, because those institutions are what's being used against you right now. And if you don't give them that power, they can never use it against you again.
Well, so like that's my big critique about like anarcho-capitalists, that you're basing this like perfect world that there won't. So you break down the state, you break down all regulation or whatever. And now who's to say Jeff Bezos can't just buy up every single thing? Like, so with, if your model, like, is that fall under Hopian, or does Hopian say that you need like a state to provide protections for the people?
No, Hopian is very much, and again, I hate the word, but we're anarchists in the very strict sense of what is defined as an anarchist by Rothbard and Hoppe. I would consider ourselves very much natural orderists, or what have you, because we want to push back towards that natural order. But given that the state exists, we have to deal with the state as it exists, right? We don't live in a fantasy land. We live in reality, right? We live right here with you and everybody else. We're not a Lulbert. We don't think that this idea that we can just retreat into nothingness and the state will just leave us alone.
Yeah.
I've got news for those guys. You may not care about the state, but it cares a whole hell of a lot about you.
Yeah, buddy.
It will find you, will hunt you to the ends of the earth, and it will destroy you. It has no qualms about doing that either. It is its purpose to do so. And it will do so until you are dead. People say, okay, we'll stop paying taxes. Okay, if you're brave enough to do that, stop paying taxes. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to give the state the opportunity to crush me before I've even fought a battle. I'm not going to give it the opportunity to kill me. Now, given, I'm not saying that you need to run for the rest of your life. Every man, I don't think you're a man unless you have a line in the sand that says this far and no further, and I'm not going to do that, and I'm going to fight you. But retreat isn't fighting. Fighting is, I can't say this without probably getting another visit from the FBI.
Has that happened?
Yes.
It
was a few years ago, but it has happened.
Jesus, dude, that's terrifying.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
That's literally terrifying.
But I haven't had any problems since, and they leave me alone now, and mostly because I don't say the things that I used to say.
Right.
I'm a little more. I'm very careful with what I say these days.
Yeah, dude, you have to.
You have to.
Literally, there is no.
But let me just say this. There is fighting is, saying I'm not going to take this anymore, and I will fight you on your own terms. That's about as explicit as I can be, but that's fighting. And my line is guns. If you come for my guns, we're both going.
Mm.
And that's the way it is. And if I can avoid it, more than just me and you will go. It will be me, you, your brother, your whole family, and your dog too. I'm not going to let that sit. And it's one of those things, right? Like, and we're very much headed there, which is why I tell people all the time, you please don't just buy guns and gunpowder and 8-penny nails. You have to get involved with the people around you. You have to have community. And this is why I don't believe in that atomization, because we're human beings, right? We can't live totally isolated. I'm sure there are people out there who can live totally isolated, blah, blah, blah. But for the vast majority of human beings. We need human interaction, right?
Yes.
You will go insane if you don't talk to people for 10 years, right? I mean, it's going to happen. And you need people to help you, too. This is kind of the basis of libertarianism. You need the division of labor. You need trade. You need these things, right? And this is, Hoppe talks about this in A Short History of Man. That's a really great book. But what humanity was born from, what civilization was born from, was separation and the division of labor. We left the caves and we left where we were because of the problems that were caused from living in an egalitarian society. The first society was egalitarian, very much so. There was probably a lot of problems that were was caused through the Malthusian conflict with the lack of food and things like this. This caused violence.
Which
and
conflict?
The Malthusian conflict. So the Malthusian conflict is basically like as the population grows, the amount of food declines.
I see.
And okay. then you get violence, right? Okay. So we've done away with that Malthusian conflict through separation. We left, we spread across the planet. And through trade, when we settled in our new homelands and things like this, we were able to farm. We were able to create homes. This is where the family came from. The family unit was needed then because the family unit wasn't needed if you're. And again, this is not this is very much the Darwinian look at this, not the Christian look at this. And I do this because it's more. I guess, quote unquote, scientific in that realm and not religious. If you want to talk about the religious aspect, I can do the same exact thing. But I when I talk about this, a lot of people get a lot out of this because they like to think about this. And it's a good thought experiment anyway, so you can think about this, right? So we left, we separated that reduced conflict. We created the family unit. Started to farm and collect plants and things like this. And that's where private property comes from. And then when private property is created, okay, well, I was able to raise apples, right? And I spent all of my time and my family's effort to raise these apples, but now I only have apples. So what the fuck am I going to do? Like, I'm not going to eat apples all the time. You get sick of apples too, right? Yeah. Like, so, well, now I'm going to trade for the guy that has wheat because I want bread. Right. So I'm going to go to him and that reduces conflict because we're trading with one another. Right. We don't want to kill the guy with wheat because he's the only guy that knows how to raise.
Yes.
Wheat, right. Yes. We kill the guy with yes. wheat. We don't get any more bread. So we're right. not going to fight with him. Right. We're going to trade with him. He might get a little stingy and want some more apples every once in a while. But that's where negotiation and pricing comes in. Right. And this is yeah. where the price system comes from is the value we attribute to things. Right. So this is kind of the progress of humanity and the creation of civilization. And you know, it depends on how you want to look at it, but you could say that God initiated that process and God allowed us to find that path and get us out of there. And you can look at it from the other perspective of, human beings found religion once the family was created in that, and then religion moved us more towards that goal, more towards peace and trade and free relations. Either way, it doesn't matter. It's the same result, right? It moved the same direction. It was the same path. You can say it either way. And this is one of the great things about this is that it is, if you are a Christian or if you're not a Christian, this explanation fits both. So there's not a conflict there between these beliefs. It's a very universal thought because it's a very human belief. It's a very human thought.
Right. No. Yeah. That I totally agree with all of that. I might be changing. So I'm sorry if you like just answer, but so anarcho-capitalism, like I'm sure you know this guy Ace on Twitter.
I'm familiar with Ace.
Okay. Yes. He drives me crazy. I don't know what you're, I think he's
he drives a lot of people.
Okay.
Crazy.
Well, first, if you're trying to grow movement, you can't approach problems with math problems. Like
yeah.
the majority of society will never. And people, if you want it, I'll give you his Twitter handle. But anyway, he always has an answer for all this anarcho-cat. So what's the big, his thing is nothing, right? No government, free trade will solve all issues. You can do whatever you want instead if you don't harm people.
Yeah.
I think all these systems, and that included with a constitution without like morality, things will crumble, right?
They absolutely will.
And so what's your take on it? Like an enforced morality.
So this is the Hoppe view is that there is this thing or this concept that Hoppe invented called covenant communities, right? They've existed throughout history. There have been covenant communities or covenant communities today. They're called private communities. And a private community, you can't enter. Private community has very specific rules that you have to follow.
Yeah.
A lot of people reference HOAs, which I'm not a big fan of. But there are good HOAs where people are involved and they care about their community. They set standards. You can't have junk in your yard and things like this. Right. But we can get more explicit when the state's eliminated because we can say, hey, you can't join my community unless you're 18 to 35, you're a white male landowner, Christian, and you can't join. Sorry, that's my community. I set the rules. Sorry, you can't come in.
Right.
And that's totally fine. And that's what this is that we have the ability to individually decide to collectivize however we want. I do not believe in this Randian idea of collectivism versus individualism. The family is a collective. You may be a human being. You have your own thoughts and your ability. You have the right to decide what you're going to do. You have the right to make mistakes, right? This is what the human condition is. But we also have the right to collectivize however we want as well. And the family is one thing that that the left will incessantly try to destroy more and more as time goes on. That's their next target. I can tell you right now, the family, the destruction of the family will be the next target of the left, because the family, as illustrated from what I was talking about before, is the first hierarchy. It is the root hierarchy.
I like that.
Because it has to destroy that. They think once they destroy that, they'll finally win. But I've got news for them. What happened when we were all without family and without hierarchy? What's the first thing that happened? Well, we had conflict and we separated and we created the family. The same thing is going to happen again. This is the reassertion of the natural order, right? So this is why the ultimate end of egalitarianism is a fruitless and bloody and awful pursuit.
Well, I mean, this goal of dismantling, I love that. Have you ever watched Man in the High Castle, Jared?
I've watched like two episodes of that.
But the one line there is hierarchy must be respected, and that's so true. And it's like, now it's viewed as being mean to, like, if someone's, you know, just like in middle school or high school, there's a hierarchy among the students.
It's and natural. We're
trying to flip this. And that's what we have. All of our leaders are either A, weak losers who finally have power after being picked on their whole lives, or people who are so degenerate that they can just be controlled.
And that's what happens in a democracy, is that you get the nastiest, most terrible people into those positions, because it is an artificial hierarchy, and the artificial hierarchy breeds these type of people, and that will insert them back into the artificial hierarchy wherever that space was created for them, right? So, like, take the Civil Rights Act, for instance, which I think is a total abomination, and not just for private businesses. I think it's a total abomination and should have been repealed from the very beginning.
Absolutely.
Not that I agree with Jim Crow laws or anything.
No, I know.
But I think that the idea that we are equal, and as such, the state has to make us equal, is one of the most evil ideas, again, that was ever created. And it was really one of the key steps towards the demise of the United States was the Civil Rights Act. But that Civil Rights Act created a vast swath of government agencies, government programs, and everything else, which allowed the creation of these specially classed individuals, right? If you're a trans black woman with one eye or what have you, you rank higher on this artificial hierarchy, right? Than a straight white male, right?
Yes.
And that would not naturally be the case. So when you've created and again, this is the left, right? The left is creating artificial hierarchies, and artificial hierarchies are a path to egalitarianism. You get these degenerate people in the wrong places in the natural order. And as a result, it will continue to collapse, because these people do not belong in those positions. They do not belong in that power structure.
Yes. Yes. So that's exactly it. Well, so how do you recover from, like, are you, I liked you, I think you just said that you want, you should, we need, or I don't know if it was you or the, now I'm getting the two shows confused, but how do you stop the system we're on? Like, it's clear, because it needs to go. You're not going to vote your way out of it.
You're not fed.
You know, I don't want to knock on the feds for my door. So what do you do?
So you're not going to vote your way out of it. I can definitely guarantee you that. However, you can use the ballot as a bullet. And that bullet,
that is a good line.
You can use the ballot as a bullet and you can use it to fight back. I have absolutely no problem with people doing that. I encourage them to do it. I tell people all the time, and a lot of libertarians are going to hate me for saying this. I don't really care. I make plenty of enemies every single day, and I've got about 85,000 people blocked. So come at
really?
Me. Yeah, no, seriously, yeah. That's the only reason I'm able to stay on Twitter, because when I get going and I have good Twitter threads, they get a lot of people looking at them, and then I get reported to hell because and I don't say anything that is objectively racist, hateful, bigoted, blah blah blah, nothing like that, because I don't want to get bit, but I still get banned because people do not want to hear what I have to say because they have a visceral reaction to it. So I've taken to just blocking anyone that either concern trolls me or calls me a Nazi or a fascist or what have you. And I block leftists outright. If I see you're a leftist, you get blocked. I have no purpose in speaking with those people because number one, it is a waste of time and resources to convert a leftist. You can convert a right winger much easier. Yes. And in my opinion, you can convert a Southern right winger more easily than just about anyone. And the reason for that is because the Southerner is uniquely positioned within the United States as the literally one of the most oppressed classes. We were reconstructed. We were socially imperialized. We were told that our language and the way that we speak is inherently uneducated. And we had our accent stripped from us. We're having our history stripped from us. And this understanding is more relevant and understandable to a Southerner because they've seen it happen.
Interesting.
The Northerner right winger can also be a good right winger. I'm not saying that they can't. I'm just saying that it's much easier to convert a Southern right winger than a Northern right winger. And I have, this is a personal prejudice, but I have something against Californians in general. And I find more often than not, when someone replies something extremely stupid to me, they're mostly from California. So I've not taken to blocking Californians, but, I do talk a lot of shit about them.
Dude, you don't need, you know, it's, you never want to get mad on the internet. It's hard sometimes not to get mad. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah. So getting back to what can we do? So you can use that ballot as a bullet. You can fight back using that. You can say, okay, well, I don't want the CRT shit, so I'm going to go to my children's meeting, school board meetings and things like that. I'm going to fight back. Don't let them scare the shit out of you. If you're a right winger, you probably have a gun. Tell them to test you, because at the end of the day, you've got a fucking gun. If they come to your house, they're probably going to fucking wind up dead. Don't worry about that. Don't be a coward. You can have balls in this day and age. It's perfectly fine to have balls, and to speak your mind. When you go to family dinners, I'm not saying ruin your family dinners, but don't be the quiet kid in the corner just because you don't think anybody wants to listen to you. It starts at home. If you can't speak to your own family, who the hell can you speak to? So it starts there. Then go out to your community, go to your school board meetings. And a lot of libertarians are going to hate me for saying this, but join your local Republican Party. They're your best bet for right now. It is what it is. Go join the Republican Party, be a member, go out and join community groups. If you're a Southerner and you're not a member of Sons of Confederate Veterans, if you can be, or Friends of Sons of Confederate Veterans, you better go do that right now. I'm a member, and I think everyone, especially every Southerner that has a lineage in the South, should go and do that right now. You need to join community groups that represent right-wing values. You need to go out and use this opportunity to push your ideas. And what we can really do once we've done that and look for self-improvement, obviously, if you're still living in your mother's basement, I hate this analogy, but because it's so overused, but if you're still living in your mother's basement, look, bro, I've been there. I've had those problems too in my life. I've had major manic depression at one point. I've had a lot of problems too. I work a six-figure job. I own my own home. I'm married. Trust me, you can get out of this. I'm not talking shit about you guys. What I'm saying is that you cannot begin to change the world until you change yourself. You have to change yourself first.
Love it.
So focus on yourself, then branch out into your community. And then you can start to change your community for the better. Use the Republican Party, your local Republican Party, grow that. And then once we have enough people that can do that and we are together, we can start to take control of local areas. And then at that point, start to dismantle those power structures that give the left so much power. Stop, get the hell rid of all your freaking stupid local laws that steal money from you. Get rid of the freaking stupid traffic laws. You can start there. Get rid of them. Who cares? Get rid of something stupid. Like, just start somewhere, right? Start to dismantle these things and start to initiate the privatization of these vital institutions, right? So
yeah,
we can privatize courts. We can privatize police. Private police do a fantastic job, much better than your city police that are run by the city mayor who answer to him, and he's most likely a leftist or some form of leftist. Privatize the freaking police, let you pay a subscription, and those private police are going to do a fantastic job for you, because if they don't, you're not going to pay them, and someone else is going to get paid to do it, right? So these are the types of things that we can do to begin to move away from this. One of the things that I always tell people is that you have to stop idealizing, especially if you're on the right, you have to stop idealizing urbanite police. They are not your friends. They are there to support this artificial hierarchy in the state. That is their primary job. Well, they are there to enforce the law. They're not there to save you. Supreme Court's already said they don't have to save you. Look what happened in Uvalde. They tasered people from going in to rescue their own children.
Right.
This is the kind of sick degeneracy that we are seeing in this thing, in our communities. So get rid of the city police. Go back to sheriffs. Elect a good sheriff. Have the guy ride a freaking horse and wear six guns. I don't care. Like, if that's what you like and that's what you want in your community, you want the guy with the big mustache that rides into town on a horse, go for it. Like, that guy, I'm sure, is going to be much more relatable than the guy that, you know, makes minimum wage and is riding in a Ford sedan from 1984, writing tickets to people for jaywalking and shit. Like, I would much rather us go back to that method of policing than this stupid stupid notion of city police that answer to bureaucrats. What an awful idea. Like, that had to have been a leftist idea. I cannot believe that a right winger would have said, screw the sheriff, we're going to give an unelected bureaucrat control of the police. I cannot imagine a right winger saying that.
I know you're busy. Do you have like 10, 15 more minutes, or do you have to go? Oh, awesome. No. Yeah. Awesome, dude. All right, great. I know you're writing books. I don't want to be your procrastination of reason.
No. Yeah, you're already on the list of procrastinating. It's just the way it is.
Well, so what's your biggest complaints with, like, because, like, you, I think you already said this earlier, how, like, when I almost called them libertarians, but when you hear the phrase libertarian, you think of a pothead who just wants to smoke weed. And I think I was, but what, because that seems to be the trajectory, right? Like, you go conservative, then you realize, well, they're shitheads too. So I'll become a libertarian. Like, what pushed you to take this, like, you know, different avenue? Like, what were your faults that you found with libertarianism as opposed to, like, Hoppianism?
It's not that I found faults with libertarianism, at least not true libertarianism. I found faults with libertarians. I think more often than not, and again, this is the reason for the site, is that we had gotten subverted. I think, as a lot of people now know, the conservatives got subverted by neocons, right? I don't know if you're familiar with this, but back in the day, there were a lot of ex-Trotskyites, Irving Kristol being the chief one. He was a Trotskyite. His son was Bill Kristol. I don't know if you're familiar with Bill Kristol, neoconservative pundit, very popular, deeply ingrained with the Karl Roves of the world, right? They slowly took over the Republican Party. And they did this through subversion. And this same thing has happened with libertarianism because of one simple thing. Any organization that is not explicitly right-wing will eventually become left-wing. And this is because the greatest tool the left has ever had, going back to Trotsky, is subversion. And they will utilize it to extraordinary ends. They are willing to sit and play the long game. They have no qualms about that. They will play any card. This is one thing that always kills me about the Libertarian Party. I hate the Libertarian Party. Still hate it today. No offense to you Mises Caucus guys. Sorry, you're going to have the same problem because you don't understand this idea of artificial hierarchies and subversion. You got rid of the Mises Caucus guys are going to fucking hate me. But you got rid of the establishment half of left-wing problem children in your organization, and then you did not get rid of the radicals. This is the problem, is that you can get rid, like if today, if we were to go in and we were to clean the Republican Party out and we got rid of all the establishment cons, right? Like yeah. You got rid of McConnell and all these guys that have been in there forever. Do you think the Republican Party would be right-wing then? Hell no, it would not be right-wing, because you still have a lot of leftists within the party. You have to get rid of them. You have to say you're not welcome here anymore. Go away. And this is the problem the Libertarian Party is going to face very soon, is that they have taken over the establishment role, but they have not purged their ranks of the people that gave the people that were previously in the establishment their power. You have to get rid of those people, or eventually when you lose your momentum, and you will lose your momentum, it is the course of politics, you will lose your momentum, and then they will take it right back from you, and they will make it 10 times harder for you to take it again.
Oh, that's a good point.
And this is what happens. And this is what happened to libertarianism. And not to say that the party is the macro here, it is the microcosm of the entire ideology, because we allowed people to take over the Libertarian Party. Murray Rothbard famously left the Libertarian Party because he saw the egalitarianism. He saw the egalitarian takeover. One of the things that Murray Rothbard said was that one of the easy ways that he always tested people was what he called the king test. And he would have asked people, what do you think of Martin Luther King? And if they said, well, oh, he's great. I think he was a great man, and you know, I loved his speech, and I have a dream and all this garbage, blah, blah, blah. He immediately knew that they were egalitarian, right? And he wanted nothing to do with them. Martin Luther King was a subversive communist, egalitarian socialist, blah, blah, blah. He was just not a good guy, fought for the Civil Rights Act and everything else. Right. If you can say he's a great person, or he's a great libertarian, or he was a great Republican or conservative, or blah, 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 you have no place with us. You've immediately outed yourself and identified yourself as a leftist. So going back to what I was saying, the libertarian ideology, not only the Libertarian Party was a microcosm of the ideology. This was a microcosm of what was happening ideologically wide, is we tried to do these things that Murray Rothbard had done at one time, which was reach out to the left and try and incorporate them into us. And he failed twice. He failed once with Young Americans for Freedom and SDS, I think is what it was called, Students for Democratic Society, tried to integrate those two groups.
They were a CIA subversive unit as well, I'm pretty sure.
So they were intrinsically left. Young Americans for Freedom were intrinsically right. He tried to unify them around this anti-state belief.
Right.
And the SDS members caused a lot of shit, caused a lot of problems. And of course, it all fell apart. So then he moves on to Libertarian Party. Same thing happens again. You have a bunch of leftists come in, be subversive, and destroy the whole thing, right? So he left that. And this is where he began to understand this egalitarian notion was deeply ingrained into leftist thought. And you cannot work with that. You cannot incorporate that. You have to burn it out. It is an infection. And I talk about I created a political term a while back. I call people like this plague blankets. If you remember during the Colonial West, the Union Army gave blankets infected with smallpox to Indians, and they took them back to their tribes and it killed them all. So the same thing happens with ideology. You let one subversive in, they're going to bring a few ideas in, and they may not be overt with them, but they may say, you know, maybe it's not such a bad idea for a minimum wage or something like this, or maybe these little leftist ideas, and then they procreated, they spread throughout the ideology, right? So Murray Rothbard was a little guilty of this because, again, he in the early days, he had made the mistake of trying to join with the left and did some writing on that, and then people latched on to that. What libertarians didn't learn, or maybe they forcefully didn't want to learn because they're leftist subversives, is that Murray Rothbard abandoned those ideas because he saw the problems and moved further right. This is why a lot of left libertarians and Lulberts will say, oh, I love Rothbard, except I don't like late Rothbard.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So the problem is that when you say that, I can immediately tell that you're a leftist because late Roth, quote unquote, late Rothbard was best Rothbard. This is the culmination of a man's life to the point where he finally understood, he had finally sharpened that iron on iron to the point that he had created a razor sharp understanding of the world. And Murray Rothbard is a very brilliant man. I don't know if you know how many books that he read, but and wrote, but he was a very prolific reader. The man was a genius in his own right. Yeah. And very historically knowledgeable. Really, truly. And to say that a man that had gotten to that point in his life had gone through these errors and issues, and that the libertarians today didn't want to learn from him and they didn't want to accept late Rothbard and things like this, tells me everything I need to know about them. Because they did not read Murray Rothbard. They did not understand Murray Rothbard. They didn't know who the man was. The man, his parents were communists. He grew up hating their ideology. He was immediately, he was immediately in the Republican Party from like the day that he turned 18. He was a conservative through and through. He was a right winger, hated communists, hated all this shit. And he saw these problems in the Republican Party with leftists. And he's like, I've heard this before. Where did I hear this? Oh, I heard it from my communist parents. I'm sick of this crap. So I'm leaving and I'm going to do my own thing and create, you know, this kind of philosophy. And, you know, if you're a Southerner, one of the first, one of the early books that Murray Rothbard wrote was a very short book, very good book called Anatomy of the State.
Yes.
That book was written based off the writings of John C. Calhoun, a famous Southerner who was intrinsic to the nullification crisis and the secession movement. Mm-hmm. So if you are a Southerner and you have not read Anatomy of the State, you are missing out. You need to go read that book because it is literally based off of Southern understanding. You should be reading that book. Anyway, he moved on from there. He had these problems with SDS and YIF. That consolidation, trying to create that new kind of anarchist anti-state movement, didn't work out. It moved in the Libertarian Party. Same thing happened there. And then finally, he began to understand it is the left that is the problem. It was never the right that was the problem, because I am right. I am right wing. I've been right wing my whole life. I understand that I'm right wing. And now I understand why the left is such a problem. So he has a great book that began kind of my journey on the path towards despising egalitarianism. He literally wrote the book on it. It's called Egalitarianism as a Revolt Against Nature. It's a perfect title. I mean, he couldn't have done it any better. And then from there went on to write Strategy for the Right, Nations by Consent, things like this, these great articles that I suggest everyone to read. If you are libertarian adjacent and right wing, great articles. Saying a lot of the same things I've said here, and maybe more words, but also in so dense that you get a, you can read them multiple times and get new things from them. It's just amazing.
I love it.
And he inspired Hans Hermann Hoppe. And Hans Hermann Hoppe went on to write a fantastic book, the book that you own, Democracy, the God That Failed.
Yeah.
And it came from these ideas of Rothbard and the genesis of what he went through. They were very good friends, you know, Murray Rothbard being Jewish and Hans Hermann Hoppe being a German and a very tall, a blonde-headed German. They actually had a wonderfully beautiful relationship. Rothbard was actually kind of a Germanophile. They got along and Rothbard actually taught Hans, to not hate himself, because this idea that is intrinsic to Germans is that the safe self-hatred.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
And Rothbard broke him out of that. He said, you don't have to hate yourself. You didn't do any of those things that were done. You had nothing to do with that. You have a beautiful and rich history.
Beautiful.
You should embrace that. And he did. And Hoppe gave a very beautiful speech on I can't remember when it was. I'll send it to you if you remind me. But about Murray Rothbard, coming of age with Murray.
Wow. I think
it was called in.
Dude, that's such a good point. I'm English, but I feel so bad for Germans. They can't show any pride. Like, dude, your history is amazing.
It is amazing.
The media has labeled you all as evil. They're lying to you. You guys, World War I was started because England was threatened by you because your economy was dominating. You were technologically more advanced.
And it's so sad. And you know, a lot of it's even more sad today because of the Germans are still controlled by the communists. The Germans never got rid of the communists.
Interesting.
They took over their government. Merkel was literally a communist youth. Literally. Wow. There are pictures of her in a communist uniform. And she controls the whole freaking country.
Wow.
I think Schultz might have been the same. I can't remember. But a lot of those Germans were so screwed by the communists. I mean, so fucked up. And, people like to say, okay, well, you know, this is one thing I really despise. And it really bothers me today among the right. And it literally makes me fighting angry. I love the West. I think the West is awesome. I think what we provided to the world was better than anything any other culture or space across the world has ever been able to offer. I think we did some really amazing things, given we have a lot of problems today, and we've had a lot of problems in the past. But the West was the dominant culture for a freaking reason, and we have nothing to be ashamed of. And one thing that I like to point to is that when there was still the Berlin Wall, and after it had come down and they were going to reunification, looking back, I think that was a mistake. I think reunification was kind of a mistake. And the reason that I say that is for a couple of reasons, partly because I'm a separatist. And I think that separation should have stayed separated for a good while longer.
Yes.
And then two, because West Germany was extremely conservative and right wing, and East Germany was communist. And people like to say, well, the communists weren't communists. They were more conservative than you are today. No, they aren't. That's a lie. And I don't know where you learned that, but shut the hell up, because you're literally lying right now and spreading communist propaganda. But when reunification came, the two of the stipulations for East Germany, and again, they didn't just want to rejoin West Germany. People think, oh, the East Germans were just so super happy. No, the Soviets mind fucked them. They mind fucked them. There was a great many East Germans that they had mind fucked, right? Like totally, like not a little, not a medium part. Like they totally destroyed the minds of these Germans, okay?
Yeah.
And two of the stipulations for reunification were you have to allow abortion, West Germany, you have to allow abortion. And two, you have to allow homosexuals and homosexual marriage. They had a gay funded, or they had a state funded gay disco in East Germany before West Germany even thought about any of this.
This absolute lie
that somehow communists were more conservative than people today is just a lie. There's so much evidence. They were the leaders in egalitarianism. I mean, all this rainbow pride flag bullshit that you see today, where you have all the different races arm in arm, where do you think that came from? It started with Soviet propaganda posters.
Right, dude. Yeah,
it was on Soviet propaganda posters, you freaking idiots.
Well, politically correct came out of Soviet 1920s, feminism, all these woke things.
Yeah. And it drives, it is one of the things that drives me the most insane, because, and I'm probably going to write an article on this, but today the right is still under attack. We were under attack from Trotskyists for a very long time. The Trotskyists control a lot of the world right now. But who were the primary opposition to the Trotskyists? It wasn't the fascists. It wasn't the right. It was the Bolshevists. It was the Bolshevik. It was the Bolshevik left, the Stalinist left. So today, what you're seeing is a lot of neo-Stalinists now coming out, and I can point several of them out to you on Twitter today, who call themselves conservatives, patriots,
patriots.
Yeah. Like, oh, I'm a hardcore right winger. Look at me smoking a cigar and all this shit. And they're fucking Bolsheviks. They are fucking Bolsheviks. These people are not your friends. They are trying to subvert you. They learned from Trotsky too. And now they're going to do the same thing to the right again. Get rid of the fucking communists. This is the problem, and we have not dealt with this. We did not win the Cold War. We lost the Cold fucking War. We lost the Cold War.
Mm.
The Soviet Union might have collapsed, but whose ideas are permeating everywhere still today?
Oh, well, dude, and that they would have collapsed so much. They would have never got off the ground if it weren't for our corporate socialist leaders and Wall Street, and they would starve. I mean, they made up lies saying they were sending food to help people in Spain but they were just sending it to Soviet Russia.
Yep. 100%.
So my last question, two part question. So was America started as, was it really like the idea of these guys, like, this is how you create the perfect government, or was it a trick? And then the second part of the question is, when did the country start being subverted and changed from these original ideals, if they were honest in what they were trying to create?
So a couple of things. There were absolutely patriots that fought in the American Revolution. I would never take anything away from those people. They fought and died and used their own money, capital, their own farms, their own families, and they fought and died for what they believed in. They fought and died for freedom, and I do believe that.
Okay.
What came after was the problem. And I think, given, I'm not saying there wasn't subversives, there weren't financiers and things like that funding a lot of this, not saying any of that. I'm saying there were absolutely good people who spent a lot of their own money and their own capital and their own lives to make sure these things came to be. Yes. But what happened was, and I actually quote James Madison twice in the first chapter of my book.
Great.
So the problem was that the founding fathers understood the problems of democracy. So what did they try to do? Well, the opposition said, well, we want a king, and we want to make George Washington king. They didn't want a king because they had just fought off a degenerate king, right?
Right.
But on the other side, they knew democracy was evil too. These were very smart men. People do not give them enough credit. They're much more prolific readers than even I am. They're brilliant, brilliant people, spoke multiple languages. These were no slouch people, right? They just didn't have the benefit of history that I have. And I recognize that I have that absolute privilege of being able to look back and say, hey, look at everything that fucking happened, right? They did not have all that. They didn't have the last 200 or 300 years that I had. Right. So when you look at that, James Madison says, you know, that democracy is, an absolute failure, and it will end in failure if we devolve into a democracy. So what are we going to do? Well, there's absolutely opposition to a king. We just dealt with a degenerate king. We know what can result from that. And we don't know what Washington's kids are going to be like, right?
Right.
So there's that. So what do we do? So let's try and make the most inefficient government we possibly can, number one. Number two, let's try and work against the ideas that promulgate with democracy and try and prevent them. And he actually has an absolutely brilliant quote. Actually, if you give me just a couple of seconds, I'll actually read the quote to you, because it is absolutely brilliant.
I love their quote. They're just amazing. So.
Yeah. I mean, so prescient. I mean, absolutely. Like the man would have, like, if people take the founding fathers seriously, they would call him a prophet. I mean, like, literally.
Oh yeah.
It is amazing. So let me just read this. The influence of factious leaders may kindle flame within their particular states, but will be unable to spread a general conflagration through the other states. A religious sect may degenerate into a political faction in a part of the Confederacy, or what they were calling the United States at the time. But the variety of sects dispersed over the entire face of it must secure the national councils against the danger from that source. A rage for paper money, for an abolition of debts, for an equal division of property, or for other improper or wicked projects will be less apt to pervade the whole body of the Union than a particular member of it. In the same proportion as such a malady is more likely to taint a particular county or district than an entire state. In the extent and proper structure of the Union, therefore, we behold a Republican remedy for the diseases most incident to Republican government, and according to the degree of pleasure and pride we feel being Republicans, ought to be our zeal in cherishing the spirit and supporting the character of Federalists. So what they were trying to do is they recognized this problem of egalitarianism, these wicked things, this malady of what they thought was humanity. And what did they do? They tried to spread it so deeply into these county and state levels out across the Union that it wouldn't infect the whole country. But what did the left do? The very first thing they did was federalize everything, right? And this is the thing that they couldn't foresee, right? It's not that they didn't understand that this was the path that they would try to take. Is that they didn't foresee the problem of federalization, or they didn't understand that it would happen so quickly. So I don't blame the founding fathers for what they did. They understood the problem. They just had a terrible solution. They were very smart men. They just didn't have the benefit of history.
Yeah. Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Sorry. But yeah, that I totally. So I like I struggle with the founding fathers because of their Freemasonic ties, or Ben Franklin in the Hellfire Club. And
I think some of that is probably legitimate, but you have to understand too that I think a lot of that at the time, this is again just my opinion. I think a lot of that at the time was less of a problem than it would have been today, because of the disbursement of people and the amount of people that there were. It just wasn't that big of a problem. But today, these types of things, these type of secret societies, these types of social clubs for the elite are a place where their internal desires become manifest. Yeah. And it's not that the club themselves is converting people. It's that these people are coming together, and you're seeing these types of people together that have these terrible beliefs. So let me read you what I wrote right after that.
Yeah.
I said, reading the above, it is clear they were also to combating the maladies that befell republics, and that these have ultimately come to pass. It was indeed more difficult for these things to arise, but the remedies were far from cures. They could only put in place things to combat this tendency and not eliminate it. Through all their suffering and sacrifice, the Founding Fathers simply were unable to combat the tendencies of men, and without proper understanding of the nature of man, it was inevitable that with even with the best of intentions, the system would ultimately fail. This should not be seen as an attack on the Founders. Quite the opposite. Given the time they lived in and the understanding that they had, their achievements were laudable, and even though they were unable to resolve these issues. And then I go on to talk more about a little bit about the French Revolution and kind of talking about that collapse and that understanding. But in summation of the chapter is what does it mean to be right wing? And I think ultimately what it means to be right wing is that you accept hierarchies exist. You accept that they are natural and necessary, and that you understand that artificial hierarchy is egalitarianism. So the only path for a right winger is to embrace natural hierarchy. And thus, you have the four quadrant political spectrum collapse into a three quadrant political spectrum that collapses back into the left-right dichotomy. And you cannot escape it. Libertarians like to say, I'm neither left nor right. Well, I'm sorry, you are. And you don't get a choice. It is literally a part of your biology.
All right.
You are left or right, and you don't get a choice to create some kind of third way. It doesn't exist. And I say the same thing to right wingers. If you're a right winger and you embrace egalitarian economics, you're a fool. You're giving the left exactly what they want. You're giving them another avenue to attack the family. You're giving them another avenue to attack hierarchies. What is capitalism but real capitalism, not Marxian capitalism or these ideas like that? I'm talking about real free market, real trade, real things like this. What is that but a simple hierarchy? You have something I want. I have something you want. We trade to get what we need and we want. That's not egalitarianism. We both have something the other wants. We're unequal.
Yeah,
that's pure. It's purely right. And the moment that you abandon that, you're a leftist. You've capitulated to the left, and you will become the left. I've noticed so many people. I cannot tell you the number of people that I've seen over the years that were, oh well, I'm a big bad racist bigot guy, you know, or whatever. And at the end of the day, they were left wing on economics, and now they're communists. They embrace the pride flag and all this shit. Like, that's what happens. You cannot get away from it. You're either right wing or you are not. You can't. There is no third way. The third way is leftism. That's the way that they get you. That's the way that centrism works. A centrist is a leftist in disguise. That's a great point.
Yeah.
So if you don't understand that, if you want more information, I encourage people to go read the chapter. It's several pages. It's quite long. It's about 5,000 words. But I think everybody will get something out of it.
Well, tell everyone, because this was all, I would love to have you on again, but tell everybody, you know, where they can find you, where can they learn more? Because I think a lot of my listeners, we're all like politically lost. And so please tell everybody how they can find you and good things like that.
Absolutely. So you can find me on Twitter. You can see my name on the screen right there at End Democracy, because I hate democracy. And
I agree.
You can check out our website at hopian.org. You can write for us if you want to. Check out our style guide. Our information is on the Twitter page. You can find the Hopian Twitter page at TheHopian. We post stuff there all the time. Lots of people like our videos and the images and memes that we post and things like that. But the website's got a little bit of things for everyone that's right wing. So a couple of great articles were also just published. Shout out to them. One about the egalitarianism of or the elitism of seed control. So controlling the seed supply. A lot of your conspiracy guys would love that one. Another one that we just published, multiculturalism as a contradiction in terms. It's an anti-multiculturalism or the anti-melting pot article, great article. And then, of course, my chapter was published not too long ago, and that's up on the site. And what does it mean to be right wing? But again, you can find me on Twitter at InDemocracy. And thanks for having me on, Jack. Appreciate it.
Jared, I love everyone in the chat. Loved listening to you. So thank you, dude. I'll put all your links in the show notes, and we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Excellent. Thanks again.
All right, man. Take care, buddy. Thank you. See you, everybody.